Join me, Rick Howe, on Island Music for the finest in ska, rocksteady, roots reggae, dub and sizzling dancehall, and all the hottest releases from around the Pacific.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Koreni from Sorong Samurai, and you're listening to Island Music.
Hi everyone, my name is Tierney from Te Tangi o Te Kara, and you're listening to Island Music.
Search up ABC Island Music to listen online or find it on the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Talofa, Marlo, Bulavanaka, and good morning. This is Pacific Beats on ABC Radio Australia. It is Tuesday, July 7. I'm Kyle Evans, filling in for Agi Dupo. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Coming up today, China rattles the Pacific by launching a ballistic test missile into the Pacific Ocean just hours after Australia signs a landmark defence pact with Fiji.
Forum leaders have made clear they want the Pacific to be an ocean of peace. We regard this proposed test as counter to that.
Also, a tragic boating accident claims a mother and daughter holidaying in Papua New Guinea. And it's semi-finals day in the OFC Women's Champions League and uncharted waters for a team from the Cook Islands.
A draw will be good enough, and Pohokura FC celebrates. They become the first Cook Islands club to make it into the semi-finals of the OFC Women's Champions League.
Yes, all that and more coming up. Pacific Beat comes to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. I'm Kyle Evans. Let's get started. But first, a super typhoon equivalent to a Category 5 cyclone has set its sights on the Northern Marianas for the second time this year. The storm, dubbed Super Typhoon Baby, made landfall yesterday on Rota, a tiny island located just north of Guam. It's packing winds of close to 300 kilometres an hour, which are expected to last until later this morning. To find out more, we are joined on the line by Rota's Mayor, Aubrey Hocog. Mayor Hocog, welcome to the program. I trust it was a long night out your way.
Yes, it was. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem at all. So, yes, look, yesterday when we spoke, the typhoon had just made landfall. What's the status today?
So today we are waiting for our governor, David Appetang of the CNMI, to issue the all clear signal. This will then allow us to activate our own respective personnel to go out and begin our assessments.
I see. So the storm is set to pass later on this morning. It looks like that's still the case.
Yes, it is. And we are very thankful that we have not had any reports of any deaths or significant harm to our people. And we just want to make sure we go out and verify that and check on people. We've had a lot of phone calls from our residents, from their friends and families from off island who would like to just ensure that their loved ones are safe. We do have communications that are down right now. Our local carriers are unable to provide service, and so many of them are unable to communicate with their loved ones here.
But look, very encouraging that that no deaths have been recorded and no one seems to be hurt. Do you know if the island has sustained any serious damage, whether it be to homes or infrastructure or anything like that?
Yes, absolutely. Our island has undergone major, not only private residential, but our government facilities, our government assets, our public areas. And so that's one of the things our main focus will be today. Once we've been issued that all clear, we have already an action plan to deploy our team to do their respective assessments.
What about critical resources like electricity and water? Are they still functioning?
No, water and electricity has been turned off prior to the disaster, prior to the super typhoon. And so our utility corporation, they as well need the governor's all clear signal for them to be activated.
I see. Will that likely happen sort of a few days down the track, typically?
We are hoping for today. We have started receiving cancellation notices from our state level. This is part of the SOP. Once they do that cancellation, then that'll enter into the all clear stage, and then we can be able to activate. And of course, we have been in communication with our utilities. They are ready. They are on standby and ready to deploy and begin their assessments. Many of our our emergency responders who have responded to our residents through their observation. There has been many power utility, power poles that have been damaged and destroyed.
It is Tuesday, July 7, and you're listening to Pacific Beats on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Kyle Evans, and I'm chatting with Aubrey Hocog, who is the Mayor of Rota, which is enduring a super typhoon as we speak. Now, Mayor Hocog, this is the second typhoon to have hit the Marianas this year. How does this one compare to Sinlaku, which struck back in April?
So this was a direct hit to Rota. We were affected with Sinlaku, but not so much to the extreme levels of our neighboring islands of Tinian and Saipan. And for Super Typhoon Bavi, it was a direct hit. And so our island has been devastated by this super typhoon. And then now once we move into the all clear, we can begin to shift to recovery mode.
I know this isn't the first one you've been through personally. Was this on the bigger end of typhoons you've endured in your life?
Yes, it has. But through our experience, this is actually about my fourth during my term as mayor for the municipality of Rota. But, you know, we learn every time, we learn through every experience, and all we can do is be prepared as best we can, convey clearly to our people what are the best practices, best strategies for them to do to prepare. And then, of course, seek safety at our respective identified shelters where they can be most protected.
And while Sinlaku obviously wasn't a direct hit earlier in the year, was the community still somewhat recovering from that typhoon as Bavi was hitting?
Yes, because we were focusing on debris removal. You know, our island has really so much of our natural beauty, our natural habitat, and there was a lot of vegetation damage during Sinlaku, and that was the focus at the time of, you know, in anticipation of Super Typhoon Bavi. And so we were just gearing towards clearing a lot of our debris alongside our highway, alongside our villages, our main villages, and that was where we were at. But now, shifting to this, there's a lot of damage and loss to personal property, and this is where we will prioritize and focus on helping our residents.
And I guess just finally, Mayor Hocog, will this, or I guess the typhoons typically, do they impact things like critical industries, you know, whether that be sort of tourism or agriculture, things like that, that might sort of put members of the community back at square one?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very curious to see the damages to our ports. I do know based on just preliminary assessments that there have been damages to our seaport. We are, again, waiting for the all clear to assess our airports. But yes, absolutely. Many of our people rely on farming to export or to support their food sustainability here, whether it's to provide for themselves, our local community, or to export. And so this is one of the things that they will heavily rely on our federal partners through FEMA, Department of War. They will be able to assist us in that manner. And there have been some financial assistance for them to be able to access and hopefully get back on their feet and allow them to recover.
Yes, and it is good to hear that assistance has been unlocked and is on the way. I'll leave it there, Mayor Hocog, but thanks so much for joining us on Pacific Beat this morning to give us that update, and good luck with the cleanup, and God bless.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Rota's Mayor Aubrey Hocog speaking from the site of Typhoon Bavi in the Northern Marianas.
Talo Falava, I'm Sosefu Omoli. Join me every Tuesday afternoon for Sister Sounds, a music show dedicated to showcasing the breadth of talented female musicians and performers from across the Pacific. Sister Sounds will bring you amazing local talent mixed with the sounds and vibe our islander audiences love by artists from across the seas as well. Tune into Sister Sounds Tuesday afternoon at 3 PNG time on NBC Radio Australia.
Here in the Pacific, disasters are inevitable. Floods, cyclones, tsunamis, fires, earthquakes. Whatever the disaster, if it strikes your home, there is a way you can be prepared. A go bag. A bag of essential items that could save your life in a disaster. You should pack your go bag now so that if there is a disaster, you can pick it up and go. The things you should put in it are water, food, medicine, toiletries, hand sanitizer, and a first aid kit. You should also pack a radio, blankets, protective clothing, garbage bags, a light, small tools like a knife, a can opener, and a whistle to alert emergency services. Oh, and don't forget copies of important documents. Disasters may be inevitable, but the loss of your life or your family are not. Prepare your go bag now and stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat. Well, China has rattled both Australia and New Zealand by launching a test ballistic missile into the Pacific Ocean. The launch from a nuclear submarine came just hours after Australia signed a landmark defence pact with Fiji, which pledges the nation's mutual defence in case of an armed attack. The ABC's foreign affairs reporter, Stephen Jedgetts, in Suva with more.
A strategic milestone bedded in the imagery and language of family.
I believe you are now beginning to feel that it is really your Pacific home.
While Australia and Fiji signed an Oceans of Peace alliance, Beijing displayed its military might for the second time in 2 years. Chinese state media confirming a ballistic missile was launched off a submarine and landed in its target area in the Pacific Ocean.
This is a routine military exercise. It does not target any third party and has been notified in advance to relevant countries in accordance with international law.
Australia has been clear with China that we regard this as destabilising to the region.
The scene in Suva, more peaceful. Australia and Fiji signing a new cooperation treaty, the Vivale Union, ploughing hundreds of millions of dollars into Fiji's key priorities, and the landmark Oceans of Peace Alliance, Australia's fourth defence alliance and Fiji's first.
Combined, these treaties represent one of the most significant endeavours Australia has ever undertaken in our history with any country.
The pact beds down mutual defence, meaning an armed attack on Fiji would
trigger Australia's full support.
Fiji urging other Pacific nations to join.
The more, the stronger, the better.
It would be a mistake to see this missile test as a direct response to Australia and Fiji signing this treaty. Beijing would have to have spent months in meticulous planning to make it happen. Nonetheless, the timing of this launch, coming literally hours after the document was signed, has a powerful symbolism.
That was the ABC's reporter in Suva, Stephen Jedgetts. Meanwhile, Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong has accused China of destabilising the Pacific region following the launch of that nuclear test missile. Senator Wong says the Australian government will let its position be known to the Chinese government after a dummy warhead was launched from a military submarine. She told the ABC 7:30 program that the tests are opposed to the interest of Pacific nations.
We regard this as destabilising to the region. The Pacific Island Forum leaders have made clear they want the Pacific to be an ocean of peace. We regard this proposed test as counter to that. On a day when Australia and Fiji have announced not only are we Vivale or family, we are also allies, and we will work together to ensure that the Pacific is an ocean of peace and that the countries of the Pacific can make our own future.
So you accept that it's a highly intimidatory response to the signing of the treaty?
As I said, I will leave it to China to speak to its intent. What I will say very clearly is we regard this, one, as destabilising, and two, as counter to the vision of the Pacific that has been articulated very clearly by Prime Minister Rambuka and other Pacific leaders.
Will you communicate that to the Chinese government?
You should anticipate that we will always press for Australia's interests and express our views to China. You might recall I did precisely that when I met with Foreign Minister Wang Yi most recently.
And will you have a specific conversation with the Chinese foreign minister about this missile test and the message that it sends?
We have consistently made those representations and will continue to do so. And the reason we will make those representations and have done is because we do want the Pacific to be an ocean of peace. We do want transparency and reassurance, and we have we see this test as running counter to those objectives.
Have you discussed this already with the Prime Minister, and what is his view?
Well, I'll let the Prime Minister speak for himself, but I can indicate what I said earlier, is the Australian government was advised today of China's intention to conduct this test.
You've said on a number of occasions that Australia is in a permanent contest with China for influence in the Pacific. Does the alliance with Fiji give Australia now the upper hand in that contest?
I have described a permanent contest in the Pacific, and I have said China will continue to assert its interests and Australia and the countries of the Pacific will continue to work together to assert our interests. We are really grateful for Fiji's leadership. It was Prime Minister Rambuka and Fiji who first proposed that the Vuvale partnership become a treaty, and it was Prime Minister Rambuka and Fiji who first proposed that we enter into an alliance. And you will recall this is only our fourth alliance, obviously the United States and New Zealand, then the historic Pukpuk alliance with Papua New Guinea, and now today the Ocean of Peace alliance with Fiji. Now what this demonstrates is countries of the region taking responsibility for assuring the peace and stability of the region.
So you're not disputing that this is about pushing back on China seeking to expand its influence in the Pacific?
China will continue to do what great powers do. It will continue to assert its interests. I've made that clear to Australians. But I always think it's better for us to focus on what we are for. This is about the region we want. This is about us taking responsibility, acting together to assure the region we want. That is what we are doing. That is what Australia is doing with partners in the Pacific.
At the same time, with this test that the Chinese have announced, is this also a heavy-handed demonstration by the Chinese that their weapons have the capacity to reach both into the Pacific but also to mainland Australia?
What I'd say is it's destabilising. And in an era where we see contest and competition, the destabilising acts can lead to miscalculation, can lead where we do not want these actions to lead. So I think China is aware of Australia's position, and I hope is aware of the view of the Pacific Islands Forum on these issues. The Pacific leaders have made their views very clear in relation to these sorts of tests.
So China is making the region a more dangerous place with this test?
It's certainly destabilising, and it's certainly contrary to what the Pacific has articulated.
Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong speaking there with the ABC's Sarah Ferguson. Stay tuned, because up next on Pacific Beat we'll head to the Solomon Islands, which is celebrating 48 years of independence.
Pacific Beat.
Solomon Islands authorities are urging people to heed weather warnings after a tragic boating accident involving a mother and daughter on holiday from Papua New Guinea. 20-year-old PNG University student Yvette Lakamanga was reported missing at sea after the boat carrying her and her mother capsized off Santa Isabel Island last Tuesday. The accident also claimed the life of her mother, Elena Lakamanga, and a respected mathematics lecturer at the University of PNG. Deputy Director of the Solomon Islands Maritime Authority, Agnes Gautet, spoke with reporter Natasha Emick about the ongoing search.
Four people boarded this small craft outboard motor from Sigana to Kilokaka, but unfortunately on their way they hit by a huge wave that had the boat capsized, and all of the four people are just out in the water. It was quite far from the shoreline.
Two people on the boat managed to get to shore, but Elena and her daughter Yvette went missing out at sea. Do we know more about what exactly happened out there?
The skipper, Mr. Fremont Guilla, who actually was on the boat, he was one of the two survivors, he and his wife. I can see that it's devastating for him as well, because he was there to pick his sister, and his niece came from Papua New Guinea. But then on the way home, hoping to reach home safely, they had this incident. He said that this incident happened around 11 a.m. and when they were all out in the water, the weather at that time on Tuesday was waves, the swells around 2.3 to 3 meters high and winds are up to 15 to 25 knots. They all swim together using the boat to keep them afloat. But then as they get closer to the shoreline, the skipper, the driver himself, advised all of them to let go of the boat because it's dangerous. Because the point they were capsized at has huge rocks. So they let go of the boat and then all of them, they swam together towards the rocks. Like he advised that if they can get onto the rocks and climb, just to wait for someone to come and rescue them. But during that time, when they were swimming to the rocks, he realized that her sister that was diseased is already like choking. She's already weak. So he went back and assisted her with the daughter who is currently missing. And then they had a huge wave that came up and then splashed all of them and they lost each other. Yeah, he tried his best and his wife also struggled and swam to the rocks and climbed to safer, higher grounds. And then he also climbed and go around to the other side of the point that they had the incident. That's when he found out that his sister's body was swept towards the shoreline and he jumped down and pulled his sister to the shore and then ran up to the nearby village, the community to report, asked him to assist him. And all of them came around to try to look, but due to the bad weather, it's impossible for someone to dive or even to jump out to the sea. Mm,
it's a tragic, tragic accident by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Because the conditions haven't really improved and Yvette's been missing for a few days now, are the prospects of finding her alive not looking very promising at the moment?
Yes, from the informant, the skipper's report, it like he gave us the analysis that chances of that missing person survival is slim. Because he did mention that he suspected that his niece must have been swept under the huge rocks at the Tanakau point where they had the incident. We also say our sympathy with this one because it's, like you say, it's tragic that they have to take this trip during this bad weather and they got involved in this incident that cost their lives.
And do you have any maritime safety advice you'd like Solomon Islanders to be mindful of at the moment?
My advice is to put safety first and avoid traveling in small crafts or outboard motors during this bad weather season. And also for the public to always listen to weather reports and do not travel when a strong wind warning is issued by the meteorology or even broadcasted by Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation. There is always another day to travel. It is not worth risking our lives.
That was Agnes Gauthier from the Solomon Islands Maritime Authority speaking there with Natasha Emick.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
It is Tuesday, July 7, and you're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Kyle Evans, filling in for Aggie Tupou today and what's been a busy show so far. We started in the Northern Marianas Island of Rota, which is on the receiving end of a super typhoon. Meanwhile, Australia's foreign minister has accused China of destabilising the region after launching a nuclear missile test with a dummy warhead in the Pacific.
Forum leaders have made clear they want the Pacific to be an ocean of peace. We regard this proposed test as counter to that.
Stay tuned because still to come, we'll bring you the latest from the OFC Women's Champions League and check in with one of PNG's best and brightest up-and-coming rugby league stars.
Discover the stories that shape our region on Culture Compass. Travel across the Pacific with Afmasanga Sayuli Salamasina von Reiki as she traces the shift from oral traditions to online connections, explores the delicate balance between conservation and cultural practice, and follows the ukulele's journey across the islands. Culture Compass, a journey through resilience, revival and deep connection. Tuesdays at 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys. Join us for Stories from the Pacific, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or where you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat, to the Solomon Islands now, where celebrations are underway to mark 48 years of independence. Australia's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese will arrive in a couple of hours for the commemorations, following a landmark Vuvalia Union treaty with Fiji, alongside a new military alliance committing both countries to support each other in the event of an attack. Mr. Albanese is expected to discuss this alliance with Solomon Islands Prime Minister Matthew Wale. For more on these celebrations, we cross now to Honiara, where Gina Makaa is an investigative reporter with In-Depth Solomon Islands, and she's on the line. Gina, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Not a problem at all. So what's the atmosphere like there in Honiara today?
Yes, so it's a slow start today, but we've seen along the way, because we're not at the airport waiting for Prime Minister Albanese and his delegation, but on the way we've seen people, vehicles and people are starting to gather to start the parade to head to the main stadium where the event will eventuate later this morning.
Now, 48 years, that's a pretty great achievement. How significant is Independence Day for Solomon Islanders, and why is it so important?
Yeah, so like any national holiday in Solomon Islands, today is one of the biggest events, like you mentioned, Independence Day, and it's usually held every 7th July. I think for people in Solomon Islands, this is a time to commemorate the country's sovereignty from British rulings in 1978. It is deeply important because it's a bit of self-governance and it unites highly diverse tribal communities and inspires national pride.
And what will Australia's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese be doing during his visit to Honiara, and what are his meetings with Prime Minister Matthew Wale expected to contain?
Yes, Prime Minister Albanese will be here for a couple of hours, and he will be covering five events today. One is the bilateral meeting with our Prime Minister. I think it's just to strengthen the bilateral meetings that I recently had in Australia when our Prime Minister came over in Australia recently. And the other one, he will also officiate at the independence. He will make brief remarks at the independence celebrations today. And one of the main highlights of his visit is the handing over of the birthing centre in Honiara as well.
Now, Australia's Prime Minister obviously signed a security treaty with Fiji yesterday. Is there an expectation that something similar might be signed in Honiara?
I don't think that will eventuate today, but I am aware that there's going to be bilateral meetings in terms of security, education, and probably climate change, but climate resilience, sorry. But I don't think there's going to be any signing of any treaty happening today.
And yes, and we reported earlier in the show that that treaty obviously came just before a Chinese missile test within the Pacific. Has that got people within government sort of nervous or anxious within the Solomon Islands today as well?
To be honest, it's still new, but I've seen a couple of concerns on just circulating on Facebook from just citizens. But maybe we'll know more about that in the coming days if we started seeing this coming out in the media from the leaders as well.
Yes, we will see. Now, Prime Minister Matthew Wale unveiled his government's policy document yesterday. What did it say about foreign relations and security with Australia and China?
Yeah, I think the Great Coalition's main policy on foreign policies is, I think it adopts a friendly to all enemy to none stand. It emphasises on restoring trust and traditional partners like Australia and New Zealand, but it keeps China will remain as a friend and development partner, but security arrangements must go first before Parliament for scrutiny, before any signing. So the main thing is for the friendly to all, enemy to none policy, which this government and the previous governments have been emphasizing on.
Yes, it's probably a prudent stance. Finally, Gina, any plans for yourself today for today's celebrations, or do you have to work the whole day?
Unfortunately, I am currently on the Australian High Commission convoy, media bus, so we'll be on duty until 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Oh, that's no good. What about a family dinner tonight? Anything like that to celebrate Independence Day?
I haven't planned anything yet. My mind is already scrapped up with all the work for today, lined up work for today. So,
typical journalist. Well, look, I'll leave it there, Gina, because I'm sure you've got a massive day ahead of you. But thanks so much for joining us on Pacific Beat.
You're welcome. Thank you
so much. Not a problem at all. That was Gina McCarter, an investigative reporter with In-Depth Solomon Islands. Welcome back to Pacific Beat. Well, a Pacific security expert says that a major new defence alliance between Australia and Fiji is a game changer for regional security. Yesterday, the two countries signed the Oceans of Peace Pact, which obliges either country to respond if the other comes under military attack. The ABC understands the alliance is open to three other Pacific nations with militaries, New Zealand, PNG and Tonga. Professor Dave Peebles, the director of the Australian National University's Pacific Security College, says it's a win-win outcome for Fiji and Australia.
I think it's really exciting. I think it's part of Prime Minister Rambuka's very personal commitment to promoting peace at the regional level, but also at the national level and in local communities as well. And I think he's someone that speaks about peace in very personal terms. I mean, he's been a soldier. He knows what it is to have people under his command die. And so he's seen what the absence of peace looks like. And so I think for him, all of this is very real. And I think he's put forward this wonderful vision of the Pacific as an ocean of peace. And this Ocean of Peace Alliance is now the sort of nuts and bolts of how you make that work. I think this is a game changer and a hint of, what will come in coming years and decades as the Pacific rises to meet the very big challenges ahead.
What was Prime Minister Sitiveni Rumbuka's original vision for this Ocean of Peace, and how have we seen it evolve into this alliance?
When you look at Prime Minister Rumbuka's personal journey, he's someone who's had a very interesting life. I was lucky to attend the launch of the Ocean of Peace Declaration at the Pacific Islands Forum Leaders Meeting in Honiara last year. Prime Minister Rumbuka spoke as part of that launch, and he was very emotional. This is really from the heart. We end up with this formal treaty, but it really comes from a place of deep meaning and from his heart for him. He's a regional statesman. I think he's thinking about the legacy he would like to leave the region. So the original Ocean of Peace Declaration was a way of defining peace and security on the Pacific's terms, because there's all these grand geopolitical manoeuvres and everything else going on in the world. But the Ocean of Peace really pushes back against all of that and other ways of framing the Pacific and different ways of framing security. And it really focuses on what's important to the Pacific. So I think the Ocean of Peace Declaration was the vision, the star that guides us all. And the Ocean of Peace Alliance is now the next step in making this real and converting the vision into practical cooperations. It's really about the commitments one family member makes to another family member to make all this real.
And so just how significant is the creation of this Ocean of Peace Alliance for Fiji, for Australia, and then broader for the wider Pacific?
This is a really significant development. It's a Pacific statement on Pacific priorities and Pacific security, and it's the next step in making the Ocean of Peace concept real. For Fiji and Australia, it's a way of bringing the two countries even closer together. Prime Minister Rambuka has called it a defining moment. The name of the treaty of the alliance is Vaitathini, and that's all about family and specifically about siblings, brothers and sisters coming together. And I think for Fiji and Australia, they're two countries that have had their ups and downs in the relationship in recent decades. But the Ocean of Peace Alliance, together with the Vivale Union, it's really about two siblings, two equals coming together to navigate the difficult times ahead. So it's a mutual commitment to each other's security. For the rest of the Pacific, it's part of, I think, a statement of the Pacific strategic identity and agency, that the Pacific security will be defined on its own terms. And I think when you think about those big challenges in the years ahead, like climate change and the increasingly terrible nature of natural disasters and all the rest of it, this is a vehicle for helping to tackle some of those issues. So it's an agreement that other Pacific countries can join. It's very inclusive, and it's a way of realising the Ocean of Peace and the 2050s.
What do we know at this point about what this alliance could mean in practical terms when it comes to security and defence cooperation between the two countries?
I think the Ocean of Peace Alliance is about getting into the nuts and bolts of closer cooperation between our militaries and our agencies to help us get through the difficult next few decades. It's one thing to have a vision of helping each other in this difficult period of climate change and water shortages and natural disasters and all those things. But you need to convert the sort of the vision and the good feelings of wanting to help each other into practical cooperation. And, another big challenge before the region too is transnational crime as well. So I think the Ocean of Peace Alliance is a platform for closer cooperation, not just on traditional security issues, but the new ones we're going to be confronting, like climate change and transnational crime, and really getting into the nuts and bolts of how do the militaries interact, how do they respond together jointly to shared challenges and so on. So it's really from vision to partnership to reality on the ground.
I guess there is also, for example, this comes up a lot with Tuvalu, with the Falapilla Union, is the balance of who is gaining the most out of these partnerships, these treaties and agreements. Even if there is cooperation between the two countries militarily, even if it's in terms of natural disasters and climate change, you have critics saying that Australia still contributes to climate change and things like that. When you look perhaps at the Ocean of Peace Alliance and the Vuvale partnership, how would you analyze the ratio of who is gaining the most out of this particular agreement between Fiji and Australia?
I think the Vivale Union and the Ocean of Peace Alliance is two countries coming together and both sides talking about what's important to them and coming up with these arrangements. I've spent a lot of time in Fiji. There's some pretty good negotiators there. I think they would have been keen to make sure that their interests were looked after, and likewise on the Australian side as well. But from my reading of the alliance, I think this is a very robust arrangement for both countries, and I think needs to be looked at holistically with the Vivale Union as well, which if you went to Fiji at the moment, I'd say the number one immediate term security issue people would talk about would be transnational crime. And so there's a lot of support there for tackling transnational crime. And I think the alliance then puts in the arrangements for some of these longer term challenges around climate change as well. So, I think there's good, savvy negotiators on both sides. I think there is a level of closeness in the relationship. The fact that the formal name of the alliance is Veita Thini, which speaks to a sort of a sibling relationship. I think this is two countries that have come together and had a good negotiation and come up with a win-win outcome.
That was the ANU's Pacific Security College Director, Dave Peeble, speaking there with Jordan Fennell. Switching to sport now, and it's semi-finals day in the OFC Women's Champions League and uncharted waters for the team from Cook Islands. After securing a draw against New Caledonia's Drehu Atletico, Puakura are the first side from their country ever to make the last four of a club competition in Oceania, and there's no shortage of confidence in their camp. As Richard Ewart reports, they'll be up against three-time runners-up Hakati from PNG in one semi, while in the other, Vanuatu's Tofea FC have the huge task of trying to dethrone reigning champions Auckland United.
Puakura FC, they've managed to slip that through. Wonderful work by Fatiaki, and Fatiaki has locked it up.
It was created beautifully for her. She sends it above a trailway and in it goes.
A draw will be good enough, and Puakura FC celebrates. They become the first Cook Islands club to make it into the semi-finals of the OFC Women's Champions League.
History for the Cooks team, for player of the match Taritia Tanaki, coach Daniel Takia, and Primrose Savage stepping out on the big stage at the age of just 13.
It's a great experience to be with these girls. First international, and I'm like very happy to get this opportunity.
We wanted to do it for our people back home and for our village. I think the hunger, that's where it came from. If we can make it to semis, I think we can make it all the way.
The feeling to get out of our group stage is overwhelming. It's the first time. It's a huge privilege for me to see how far we come as a team and also the preparation that we did since the beginning of the year.
But now coach Takia and his team face a tough prospect against Hakari. The team from PNG have been runners-up for the last 3 years, and they are understandably keen to break that run and claim the title of Champions of Oceania at last. Coach Erickson Komeng has great faith in his players, three of whom come from Fiji, while the rest are all from PNG.
We have a talented squad, and if we can play as a team and be clinical, I think we're in a good track and looking forward for the semi-final. All the friends and families back home, lot of support, all the girls. I think the important one is when families are happy with the girls, I have a good bunch of players. So yeah, thank you back to everyone. My mum back home watching.
I'm so proud. I'm so happy for the team. We worked together and we did what we did during training, and we executed it. I'm so excited and happy and looking forward for the next game.
Hakari player Michaeline Batubu in upbeat mood ahead of her team's big game.
From the corner it comes. Oh, lovely from Erikan! Limas Erikan with a brilliant header to give Tofea FC the lead in this match. 4-3. Well, that is it. And Tofea Women FC confirm their place in the semi-finals.
Meanwhile, after their tremendous comeback win over Fiji's Bar, Tofea FC's coach Robert Calvo is trying not to be too daunted by the task facing his side now in the form of Auckland United, who have already rattled in 20 goals in just two games as they go in search of their third title in a row.
No one wants to play Auckland in the semi-final, so that's not a question to ask, because we know that Auckland is a giant inside the competition, so it's going to be hard, and especially they had 1 week of recovery, which we will have only 2 days, and knowing that we had three strong games and they only had two games, so they already have an advantage on that side. So playing Auckland, it's going to be a very, very difficult task.
And Tafia's semi-final against Auckland United kicks off at 8 p.m. this evening at the National Stadium in Honiara, while Hakari and Puakura will be the first cab off the rank at 4 p.m.
Big day of action, to say the least. That was Richard Ewart there with a preview of the OFC Women's Champions League semi-finals. Now to rugby league news, where London Broncos fullback Morea Morea says there was never any hesitation in accepting a development deal with the PNG Chiefs, despite it not guaranteeing him a top 30 spot. Morea has been named among the first PNG-born players to officially join the Chiefs ahead of the club's inaugural NRL season in 2028, signing a 2-year development deal alongside his London Broncos teammate Gairo Voro and Finlay Glare. It follows a standout weekend for Voro, who rewrote the club record book, scoring 7 tries and 44 points in a 78-16 win over Hunslet. The PNG trio will now work towards earning places in the Chiefs' top 30 squad. Morea spoke with Natasha Emick on why he's eager to prove himself over the next 18 months.
Management for the PNG Chiefs came out to London to watch some of the PNG boys who are playing in Super League and Champions. Initially, I think we were probably in their plans. So yeah, they came out here and then had a meeting with us. And then they, Michael Chalmers and Lorna McPherson and Liam, who is their recruitment manager, came out here and they offered us a contract.
Did your family call you? What kind of reactions have you been getting?
It's always special, especially, you know, being first Papua New Guinea citizen with the PNG Chiefs. But yeah, it was 1 a.m. here when it was announced. So my phone was buzzing, but I was sleeping. But when I woke up the next morning, my phone was just buzzed. You know, it was always a dream playing in NRL, but it's even more special, getting the chance to do that with your home team.
Because it is a bit of a different deal, right? It's a 2-year development deal rather than like a guarantee in the top 30. When that was put in front of you, what kind of conversation did you have with the club, and what gave you like the confidence to say, yeah, I want to take that opportunity?
I didn't have, you know, second thoughts about that offer, really. You know, I just wanted to be part of the Chiefs in 2028. So, but we had conversations that there are chances that, you know, if we, this World Cup coming up, and there's also if we play Super League next year, there's a chance they could upgrade the contract to top 30. But for now, we were offered development contract. So, I mean, I'm cool with that. But, you know, it's 18 months away from now. So there's still a lot of time to, prove that you're ready for that top 30 spot.
So you didn't want to miss the opportunity?
Yeah, I didn't have second thoughts. I was pretty happy though. I asked a lot of questions though, but Thomas was, they were really honest with what they were saying, and they were pretty straightforward, so which was good.
Getting to train and learn from the likes of people like AJ and Jerome Luai and all those kind of blockbuster players that have already been announced. Are you excited for what that's going to look like and what the team dynamic is going to be?
Yeah, definitely. As part of my contract is to develop my career and to have the chance to do that with the people of that caliber. It's something I'm looking forward to. I've trained with Alex at Comos, and yeah, he's someone that we really look up to. So and to have like Jerome and all those boys who are really like superstars, it'd be good for us. So yeah, looking forward.
What message would you have for maybe other kids who might now see a pathway opening up, who might think that I want to be, you know, on the Chiefs one day as well?
I think they had to realize that they're probably the luckiest kids right now to have an NRL team come into the National Rugby League when they're kids, you know, and their dreams are going to be like really achievable. I guess just work hard, commit yourself to it, put God first. Yeah, and know that your dream is achievable with the Chiefs.
I mean, when you were kind of starting up and going through that grassroots, what was your mindset like?
Yeah, I guess I really, rugby league is not just a sport. It was my passion. You know, when I don't play, I miss it. You know, it's just as simple as that. I grew up in a village where rugby league was just, like, we wake up and talk about rugby league, sleep talking about rugby league, just sit in dinner, talk about rugby league, and we play all the time.
That was London Broncos player Morea Morea speaking with Natasha Emick. 25 tries this season already for the London Broncos, and I'm sure if he gets the opportunity, he'll make the Chiefs just as proud. And that does bring us to the end of Pacific Beat today. Time to take a look back at our main stories. A Category 5 Super Typhoon baby has rocked the island of Rota in the Northern Mariana Islands. The Mayor, Aubrey Hocog, says respondents have reported extensive damage to infrastructure.
Through their observation, there has been many power utility, power poles that have been damaged and destroyed.
We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. That's 6 a.m. PNG time. You can also hear us again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. That'll be with Richard Hewitt. Stay tuned though on ABC Radio Australia because the news is next. And coming up after that is Nija Daily. You'll find all our top stories on our website. Just type Pacific Beat and Radio Australia into your search engine. My name's Kyle Evans. Have a fantastic day.